I've been doing IT security management for I would say close to 20 years. Before that, did pen tests, security concepts, stuff like that. And I've been in mostly regulated environments, quite a bit of exposure to legal requirements, etc. The second bullet point is sort of like the alphabetical, what I know. I did quite a lot of IT baseline protection from the German BSI. And the last thing that I found in the alphabetical list is the Vertrauensdienstegesetz in Germany, which is the trust services law. And obviously I'm from Germany, so. Agenda, so we'll start a little bit about how are ISMS supposed to, what are they? Second, how are they supposed to function versus reality? Then hacking, which is a bit short, some anecdotes, and then some recommendations, depending on like what sort of your role is in that. So, management systems in general. There are probably two that you know. The one is the ISO 9001, which is quality management, and then the other one is 2701. Security management. The important thing about those standards is they don't in themselves guarantee that you have quality or management. They make sure that you do management of quality, management of security. And the idea is that by continuous improvement, you'll get better. So that's an important fact to keep in mind. So, and also that applies to certifications. So if you have a certification for one of those, you're doing that stuff. But where you started off, where you currently are, and where you're ending up with, that's undefined, you know? So, ISMS. So essentially you have a process, because management systems are process-based. So you have, you know, documentation, so policies, procedures. Don't, you know, give your password away, clean desk policy, blah, blah, blah. The central role for that is the CISO or whatever the term is that's used. That person or that team, they draft up all the documents, essentially providing all the people that are involved with guidelines on how they are supposed to do their work. Then the next important part is internal audits. So then those people go and check if everyone is complying with those things, right? And the last item, risk and incident management, is about, well, you know, we're supposed to do like 10-character passwords, but our system only allows 8 characters. What do we do now? Well, you're not fulfilling with the requirements, so that's a risk per definition. So essentially, you write down the risk, someone has to accept it, and then everything is happy. And with incidents, more or less the same, just not, you know, sort of planned, but it just happens. So, CISO, ISO, you know, depends on the size of the organization. There's at least a dozen of role names that can be assigned. Two important stakeholders is management, because they are the ones who say, okay, we want to do this. We want to do security management because of legal obligations, because of contractual obligation, because we think it's a good idea. And then you have the people who are affected by that, so the stakeholders. So to give you just a short visual idea, so the fireman is the security management team, then right next to it is the management, and on the bottom you have sort of the stakeholders. So one is supposed to be IT, the right-hand side, and the other one is, you know, whatever. I couldn't find a better clip art that was, you know, public domain. So management says, okay, hey, you guys, I pay your salary. You go do stuff, right? Here's your to-do list. Do that. Then management says, okay, hey, security team, make sure we're safe, we're secure, right? So go do stuff. So the security management team then says, okay, hey, you guys, this is important, you know, do that, passwords, et cetera, whatever. Just like I said, you know, if it can't be complied with, then the CISO goes, okay, hey, we have a little issue here, you know, just something management to be aware of. You have essentially two options. Just accept it, so it's documented risk, or throw, you know, resources at it and we'll solve it, you know. So, theory and reality, ISMS processes. So, I already said this, you know, if processes are implemented and they continue to be, you know, executed, then essentially you'll get better at the result. And the result is your security niveau, posture, whatever you want to call it. So that's the core idea of all these management systems. In reality, the processes themselves are okay. Why don't we have effectively really good security everywhere is because essentially all the involved people, they don't get it, you know? Oh, we didn't know this applied to this system as well, you know? We thought that was sort of, or we didn't even know about it. And in my experience, the real root cause is they don't get it. Now watch to the slide. They don't get IT. So they don't get it, they don't get ID. So IT it makes everything complicated. So just as an add-on, I just found this funny, is I create the infinite monkey theorem. So if you have an infinite number of monkeys operating an infinite number of ISMS, will that lead to an effective ISMS? Well, you know, probably, but that's probably not the strategy to go. So really just, you want a couple of good monkeys, so to say, and they'll lead to great results. Also, processes are, you know, important. It's sort of like, this is the way we do things. But in real life, things sometimes, you know, are done differently. So in order to you know, if some customer or so wants to audit you, you need to show, okay, we've been doing this. So sometimes the processes are, you know, just, oh yeah, let's do the process steps. We've already come to the conclusion, we know what we do, but let's document whatever the process says so that, you know, we have that. And that's a great term, the performative art for that. So next up, risk management. So you have risk classes. So I have a low risk, medium risk, high risk, and you really want those to be non-overlapping, right? You want, okay, up until this point it's a medium risk, and from there on it's a high risk, right? So that's the theory. In reality, even if you just consider just finance as a risk criteria. So if the damage is higher than 1 million euro, that's a high risk, right? But what all accounts into that? If you have an outage, well, maybe you can say, okay, we're losing 100,000 euro per hour, so after 10 hours, it'll be a million, a high risk, right? But then there's other things to consider, like what about the cleanup of the incident? You know, all that can be counted in, and if you count everything in, it becomes very diffuse in terms of what's the number. So everyone can sort of agree, that's, you know, roughly 500,000, roughly 5 million, but if you want to be more precise, then it really gets awkward, and that's a problem, obviously, with clean edge risk classes. Well, is this 900,000? Is it 1.1 million? We don't know. Well, let's see. So, essentially, it's more of a guessing game. Then, the impact definition. So, if you consider not only financial criteria, but also like operational impacts or reputational impacts, they should be also defined in a way that they don't overlap, right? So if you say, okay, let's just do financial criteria, then we can do, is it 900,000, 1.1 million euro, whatever. The reality is the business people, most often they can't put a number on things. They, you know, they're great with business plans. So, we'll do build this and then we'll make this amount of money. But if you ask them, well, what if this goes down? They're like, I don't know, you know. Again, guessing game. So next, and that's essentially it. You know, we can make informed decisions, but business can't put a number on it. So I've seen this more often than less often is that IT then says, okay, well, we've got the number of transactions. Okay, well, we can sort of put a number on it. And hey, business, why don't we take that number? Okay, let's do that. You know, but that's not how it's supposed to work. Okay, so certifications is the next topic. When you want to get a certification, you're the organization, hey, I want to do this. So, but there's a step before that. So you have a certification body, the one that issues essentially those certificates, and you have someone who is an auditor. Well, he's not an auditor yet, he's an expert. And actually, he's the expert. Does anyone get that reference? No? Okay, look up The Expert on YouTube. You'll like it. It's a 7-minute clip. One got it. Okay. So, the expert, he has to go to the certification body and say, okay, hey, I want to be an auditor. Then he has to do some things, some trainings, whatever, and now he's an auditor. Right? So the organization is like, okay, we want to get one of those certificates. So, hey, certification body, can we have one of those? They're like, well, yeah, it'll cost a bit. So give me some money, right? So, here's a list of auditors that you can pick one from. Just go talk to them and they'll audit you. And if then you have a positive result, then you get a certificate, right? So next step is, well, we'll talk to the auditor. We'll give him some money. He'll go do stuff, you know, inspect everything, assess everything that's required. And then if in the end, you know, you'll get a certificate. Hey. So obviously there's a conflict of interest, right? The auditor is paid by the organization, but he has to adhere to all the standards, etc., set forth by the certification body. And that's a non-resolvable conflict of interest, right? So, if get one of those certifications, it's important. They attest that you have those processes. They don't say that. They don't really say anything about the quality of what the result is, right? Then the question is how comparable are certifications? Can I have a certification ISO 27001? Great. I have another vendor here. We also have one. How can I compare those? And there's really two major factors in that. The one is scope. I can freely define my scope. I can be like a software as a service provider and define the scope of just my office IT. So like, you know, HR, whatever. And I have a certificate. Yay! You know, so scope is the first one. But even if you say, okay, I have two certificates that are sort of equivalent in terms of scope, are they comparable? No, because the depth of the audit of the auditor is really important. If you have an auditor who is great at assessing, like, are your processes functioning, etc., then he's a great auditor in terms of ISO 27001. If he doesn't know much about IT, he might just say, yeah, well, you know, that Windows 7 web server that you have a risk acceptance for that. You're fine, you know? So, and then there's the German IT Grundschutz, which is essentially just an ISMS, like the process-based thing. But the add-on that they give with it is they give you technical requirements or process requirements. So something like, well, if you have a Windows 2019 server, you need to set this setting to B, you know? They do that. And this catalog is huge, but it's not so well maintained. But it's still, you know, it's better than nothing. So they're really putting amounts of effort in it. But, you know, the subject is huge. I mean, we're talking about potentially every aspect of IT that they need to cover, right? But the point here is they have sort of hard requirements, like what you need to do to get the certificate in the end. And one is that you have the need to have the documentation based on their process and templates, etc., and that needs to be complete. So if you're missing one attribute in one document, like, for example, you have a list of your IT infrastructure, and it says, okay, we have a server, and it's Windows 2019, and but we missed to put in, like, who's the admin team in charge of it, right? Well, you won't get a certificate. That's a hard criteria. So that needs to be fixed. Whereas the example, the Windows 7 web server, just the same thing. Hey, let's go. You know? So let's go on with the next topic, which is hacking in ISMS. Did I click? My slides are lagging a bit, so I don't know if I clicked or didn't click. There you go. Okay, so I guess you already got the impression. ISO 27001 has a lot of potential for fool's gold, so something that shines but isn't really all that great. But, you know, the scope hacking we talked about, then you can just define your own risk criteria. You can say, okay, we're a 10-person-based company. You know, we make like $5 million per year or something like that. And our risk class for medium starts at 10 million. So all we have is low risks, you know? So you can tweak those to you know, have a better picture in the end. And then, you know, if you really want to, if you're like, you know, I want to make my own life easier as a CISO, yeah, well, let me do internal audits that are just, you know, essentially worthless. Let me do. Let me test those systems that are well maintained. Let me just ignore the, you know, the Windows 7 web server over there or whatever. And the last part is for certification. When you get the auditor, you know, if you get a one-trick auditor that you know knows everything about physical security, who complains that you know, like your fire door doesn't match to the door frame fire classes. Then you know, he's like, you need to work on that. But a real life experience, oh, that Windows XP thingy over there, that's fine, you know. So that's a lot of ways where you can manipulate the whole system, sort of. And then I have one specific for the. Oh yeah, all right. If you do that, you need to you know, keep appearance. So make sure when someone. Like someone who's interested, a potential customer, they scan you, you know, make sure that looks great. Because otherwise they'll be like, well, you have the certificate, but we found like this whole mess on the internet about you. They might ask questions, you know, make sure that external security posture is okay. And then you'll be sort of okay on your way. So for the BSI IT baseline protection, there's also one hack, which is... they provide with all these catalogs, like one is for Windows, one is for Linux, etc. If you don't like what's in there, you can just define your own. Well, we don't like the requirement for enabling SE Linux in the Linux catalog. Well, let's make our own. Let's make our, I don't know, Debian Linux catalog, and we'll just skip on the SE Linux. So you're free to sort of build your own set of requirements there, which is a bit of work, but you know, if that's what you want to do. So let's get on to the funny stories, real life experiences. I mentioned this, I worked in a regulated environment, so this was one of the most highly regulated environments. Anything you can think of that can be put forth on you as a service provider was contractually regulated. So everything, you know, like what they did is essentially, you know, then you build up like a project team that you know, does all these things, and especially for ISMS, you have people who review documents, you have other people who do pen tests, etc. and stuff. But still, stuff happens. So I just really I was working on a different project, and I just wanted to copy and paste something from a document that I knew they had, you know, content that I sort of also needed. So I opened their document and found the part in the document that I was looking for, and so I'm like, oh yeah, and that has also the reference to the corporate document. So, but wait, that reference document, that was invalidated at least 4 years ago at the time. Okay. How does that happen? Should that happen? No, because you know, the document needs to be reviewed regularly. So, but yeah, the document had been reviewed twice since then. So, should have been caught, right? Well, you know, that can happen. They didn't, you know, see it. It's you know. But there's another aspect, and that's they didn't look at it because that cited passages, a passage that they inserted in a document, it had Windings as the font. Windings, if you don't know, it's the symbol font. So there was nothing to see there. You know, got the Word document, changed the font to, you know, whatever, Times Roman or whatever, and yes, it had the right text, but it just, you know. And that's, you know, in an environment where you say, okay, this is as good as it gets. So stuff happens. So next up, and this is one of my personal favorites, is a different project. We from a customer, we got a security or compliance questionnaire. You probably know all those, right? Anybody not having experience with compliance questionnaires? Okay. So, you know, it was just all the same, except for one question. And we had just enjoyed that question so much. The question was, do you have any wastewater or sewage pipelines running above your IT equipment? And you know, every question that's asked has a story to it. And I just pity the person that had to just, you know, do all the cleanup work there. So, yes. So, recommendations. Next up. So if you're an organization, get it CISO, you know. And it really, it can hurt, but the important part is you need to get someone who understands both the business aspects, the legal aspects, and IT. Those are the sort of hard skill sort of requirements to be, you know, in an effective domain. And then, of course, soft skills are important as well. You don't want that, you know, person who knows all this stuff but just doesn't interact with anybody. So you need to get someone who's, you know, so social. And then you have one, you know, maybe you're not a large organization, make sure you have a backup. You don't want your bus factor to be one. You don't want that one person who runs the show to, you know, just quit the job or, you know, have an accident or whatever. Make sure you have a backup. So SMEs, small, medium enterprises. And just adapt as you move along, you know. I would say those two things are really the important ones. And if you want to get a certification, get a good auditor, you know, good in terms of someone who really challenges you. Both in terms of processes, both in terms of IT and all the other stuff. And usually the certification cycles are 3 years, so you have an audit every year, but every 3 years you get a new certificate. After two certification cycles, I would recommend that you get another auditor just so you don't get the you know, the burn in on you know, whatever. You want a different opinion, you know. So if you're working in an ISMS, you know, be social, establish trust. You don't want you know, FUD to be your working principle. You want trust to be the working principle, because then people like from IT will come to you and say, okay, hey, you know, we have this issue. Okay, yeah, essentially, I mean, this is a risk, you know, we will handle it, you know, but you want those guys and girls, whoever, to come to you and tell you, okay, you know, you won't get mad at you, etc. So, you know, build trust. Also, it helps to build up karma points. So, if you, and you know, that's presumably applies to all of you here, you know, IT, you can help them at time. You can be like, what are you working on? Oh, wait, I know that. Did you try this? And they'll be so grateful. So, build up karma points. As for risk classes, settle for less. You know, if you have like six risk classes and a risk matrix in terms of impact and probability, you get so many edges where like, is that here, is that there, is it there? You know, it's the guesswork, so three by three is also just good enough, you know. Most often it'll be four by four, but do that. Then if you want to, you can have the option of doing risk analysis in two means. One is to say, okay, let's say we have a million as the financial category for impact, and well, yeah, we're above a million, right? Well, you can do quantitative risk analysis, which is essentially a Monte Carlo simulation, where you'll get a result that in the end should be more appropriate, but this whole thing is mathematically so complex and requires so many input data, you really don't want to do that. The only time you want to do that is when everyone involved, and I mean, I'm talking like the people in security management, I'm talking about the people in management and the stakeholders, all the other people, right? You just want to do that if everyone is an expert. And now for another reference. Ah, the audio is not playing. Let me do that again. Can you turn on the audio from the laptop? Okay. So the expert. Okay, he's saying, you know, hey, I'm Scott Williams and I'm the expert. If you watch the sketch, the 7-minute the expert sketch, the solution is the you know, is you're like, what, you know, that can't be done, right? Well, he found a solution. So gotta watch the expert solution as well as a 1 or 2 minute clip. So when you're in ISMS jobs, you need to address your audiences appropriately. You need a different language when you're talking to HR. You need a different language when you're talking to IT, et cetera, et cetera. Know that, you know. Also, look at the past. If you've done this for a couple of years, you have so much data. You have like probably dozens or hundreds of risks in your risk register, some that have been closed off, have been done away with. Use that data to evaluate whether or not the classification was appropriate. You know, like your end result might be, well, we have a 5x5 risk matrix. It clusters around the middle section. We can do away with at least one column, one line. So just use whatever data you collected over the years to improve. And also important, when you're working in such a field, you get contact with lots and lots of things that are supposed to happen, like strategy from management, projects that haven't been announced yet. You get contact with individual projects that they might not know about each other. So use that insight to help those people get their job done better. Tell them, okay, you should talk to that project over there with that person because he solved the problem that you're working on already. So, and of course, there's times when you can't because, you know, it's something that's still under, that's under, you know, NDA or something. But, you know, if appropriate, do that. So, and for everybody else, when you're interacting with people from an ISMS, don't expect too much of an IT knowledge. You know, you might be lucky. You might have some people there. Cherish those, especially in larger organizations when, like, the ISMS team might be, like, 30, 50 people. If you know, like, the two or three maybe that have IT skills, you need to connect with them because they are your entry door into the whole ISMS organization. If you need to get something done, they're your entry door. Give feedback, you know, they're all just doing their job. And also, and that's sort of what I have been trying to do is get people that know IT to get into ISMS, get into security management. But I would only recommend that to people who can put up with documentation work, who can put up with dealing with people that don't know too much about IT or whatever. So be you have to have a certain level of patience, etc. And but if that fits you, go into that because you have lots of insights into your organization. You have you build up a lot of knowledge about surrounding like legal stuff. You know, you just find yourself. Let me read through that law. Let me go talk to our corporate lawyer, whatever. You learn stuff that you didn't expect. And also career-wise, that's, you know, not a smart move. Security is in demand, so. That was it. I am just on time. So now we're on to questions.
Yes, question.
Thanks for your talk. Would you agree in regards to ISO standards that there should be more safeguards into them to make sure that people don't screw them, like make them easy to get, etc.?
Well, the whole story is that the especially the ISO 27001, they have an annex which contains technical procedural also requirements. So things like you need to do patch management, you know, so more specific things. You need to do access control, you need to have a concept, etc. The picture I painted isn't the whole picture, but it's still a just an overarching standard because it has to be suitable for small and medium enterprises to, you know, the largest organizations that we have on Earth. So I think it's already at where it should be. What I really think where they should improve is the auditors, because they essentially, you know, what their idea is, well, you have an auditor who can assess whatever is written in those standards. He's an auditor, right? That's only half the story, you know? A good auditor will be like, okay, well, you just told me this. Yesterday in our audit session, I heard this from a different team, whatever. How does that map, you know? Those are things when, you know, especially if that comes out to be an issue where you're like, oh, wow, you know, yes, where you can really improve. So I would say it's more the auditors that are the where improvement needs to happen. And that's what I sort of like about the German Baseline Protection Standard is because it has a lot more of those the detailed technical requirements. But as well as there, you have auditors who will be like, do you have that? Can you show me? Yes, I'll show you a document. Can you show me on the system? We'll put up something on the screen. And they'll be like, okay, yeah. And you're like, we haven't even reached the screen where that setting is, you know? So, yeah.
Thank you very much for the talk. Could you briefly sketch the steps which are necessary to become an auditor, for instance, with regard to Wi-Fi security?
Okay. So there's like otter is a broad class, right? It's someone who you essentially pay to assess something. The question is assessing against what baseline, against what standard. When you're talking about like Wi-Fi, I'll be more thinking about something like a pen test, you know. So hey, just you know, pen test our Wi-Fi. Essentially, the audits that, in terms of an audit, which is almost always like first check how it's supposed to be done. So documents, what are the process, what are the security levels, security settings that are supposed to set, and then check the implementation. Is that also the case? Essentially, like the standards, there's now improving number of legal like laws where things that have to be audited against, the critical infrastructure. So NIS 2. Well, if there's a NIS 2, there's a NIS 1. NIS 1 is about critical infrastructure in Europe. So I think the baseline was. If you're providing services out of some categories like telecommunications, water, food, etc., and if you're serving more than 500,000 people, you're critical infrastructure. And then you need to have, like, I think it's annual audits. So those are auditors who test against the legal requirements, right? The question is really about what setting would be a setting where you test against specifically for Wi-Fi, and the only thing I can think of right now is if it's a product, and that product manager says, okay, we need to get a common criteria certification, because common criteria is a product certification. So then you could be an auditor for Wi-Fi or whatever, you know, and do that. It comes down to independent of what you are, you need to demonstrate knowledge, either because you have been already working with them and they say, okay, yeah, we know you're good, but you still have to do the some sort of, you know, test or whatever assessment in order to comply with their processes. But most often it'll be something like, well, do this training. At the end of the training, you'll do this assessment, and then you'll be an auditor. And then, as an auditor, you need to sign, like, okay, I will abide to whatever principles the organization set forth, etc. I will do like annual training to, you know, keep my skills up to date, etc. So there's a lot of side work that an auditor needs to do, sort of just like any, you know, personal certification. So. Most often when you get a contract from some company to do an audit, you will also then again have to sign a letter of independence. Okay, I'm you know, they pay me, but I'm independent. And there's in real life the auditors, we have this issue. Auditor says, okay, that's something you need to work on. And you're like, well, what do you suggest? And the auditor will be like, well, I can't suggest you because that would be consulting and I'm not allowed to consult you with how you do, you right? But you can, with most auditors, you can sort of play the question and answer game. If we do it that way, would that be good enough? No. Well, if we do it that way, yes. So, They know about their double role, is essentially what I'm saying. Okay.
Hello. Yeah. Actually, I have some tips from my own experience as a Dutch company with around 10 people. About the auditors, I think in the Netherlands at least, there are also quite some decent ones, but it depends a bit on their organization because they have their own... guidelines, sort of. Some are really like religious on the letter,
yeah.
And others are more of in the spirit, or they see if you have this address properly,
yeah.
Then they judge on that. And what I also recommend, if you're looking for an internal auditor, actually get an external auditor, independent, for example, and use that one because they are and it actively does external audits. because they know what the latest stuff is with interpretation of certain rules.
Right.
And also ask them, for example, to keep an eye out on the stuff you do, which is actually not required by the standard, because often you see people, if they have the requirements, they make stuff up. You should write what you do.
Right.
But then they write stuff or start doing stuff because they think it's what's needed.
Yeah.
And then you get that the internal auditor asks, like, well, where does it say that you have to do that?
Right.
And
yes.
Then you can cut the crap from right. your ISMS as well. And yeah, and involve a lot of people, I think. We pull in the team members who are in there. If their stuff is being audited, we always pull in the person who actually does the work.
Uh-huh.
And all the processes we have are actually the ISMS processes. It's only very separate. A small part is only ISMS only. The rest is all the ISMS, basically all the company documentation. And yeah, keep it simple.
Yeah,
I think it's really the ISO is actually really easy if you did it a few times and have it on the writ, and then if you do some other certifications, then
right.
it's really easy.
Yeah, yeah, no, especially the ISO 27001. If you have a corporate setup working, you effectively do work, and just like you said, if you have done this a few times, one person show can run the show. You want a backup, right? So you want someone to go along, but you don't need five people in that domain. Yes, that's a stressy job then, but it's possible. And why am I saying that? Because that's what I'm currently doing.
Then I want to thank you again for having making this great talk, and thank you for the great questions. Give it up once again for Jürgen.
Thank you, and then enjoy the rest of the camp.